It is Saturday, July 25th, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news and your calls with questions and comments about technology. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Hey, please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we're going to be doing geek news like we do every week, and in the second half, we'll welcome you to join the show with calls and questions about technology, so you can ask us anything you'd like today. The phone numbers to do that would be 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us an email and participate on our online forums anytime you'd like. Including right now at geekspeak.org. And I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Al Luckow, he's a new media architect. Morning, Al.
Hi.
We also have Ryder Brooks. Ryder Brooks is a support engineer at Sun Microsystems, I believe.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ryder. It's been a while since we've had you on.
Yeah.
And also via Skype, we have Ben Jaffe. And Ben Jaffe is a freelance media guy. Last week you were a Stanford instructor. Where are you this week?
I'm currently last week I was a UCLA instructor. The week before I was a Stanford instructor. Next week I'm a UC San Diego instructor.
You're just jumping all over the place.
I'm all over the place, yeah.
And you're teaching 11 to 18-year-olds somewhere in there?
Somewhere like between 9 and 15-year-olds, two groups, teens and adventurous kids.
Well, thanks for joining us, Ben.
Yeah, certainly.
Today we're going to start off the show with our news, of course, and I'm going to throw it over to Al. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good.
Well, I don't know what to think about this. It's it's called Air Yakiniku. Food for thought. It's a website that Japanese, and it basically shows you somebody cooking a meal, and it's just the meal. I mean, it's not like a cooking show or anything where, take this much,
So it's just like photos of
it's video of the whole thing, the meat cooking, and then it's like flipping over the meat.
So if I went in my kitchen and I set up a tripod aimed at my stovetop, my range, and just cooked a meal.
Mm-hmm. And it does this whole thing. They're all like traditional Japanese meals. And it's a flash thing. It takes a little while to load, but once you got it, it's this video, and then it actually has you can print out a bib for yourself.
Okay.
So the grease doesn't get on your computer. Okay. Apparently you put it over your keyboard. And it seems a little weird, but it was ranked as the 29th most searched site on Yahoo last week.
So it's popular.
Somebody's looking at it, and I went and looked at it, and it was.
Is it your new favorite thing?
You know what? Strangely, I want to go back.
Oh, I'm wearing the bib right now. Actually,
are you? Yeah,
I'm watching it. Yeah,
it's. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you think you've seen everything, and then you see something like this, and a lot of times I think, why didn't I think of that? But I never would have thought of this. And
are all these are these posts of cooking from people that participate, or is it like a couple people doing
it? It's just a couple of hands, and then it shows chopsticks like the person's eating it and everything. You know what I think? It's kind of like that videotape you can get of a fireplace.
Yes.
That you put on your TV or a fish tank or something.
So, Al, you could do it in the States right now. Just let's see, the URL would be a food cook POV, point of view. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, you think there's just lots of ideas out there.
Yeah, yeah.
You think, I can't do that anymore because everything's already been thought up. But then you see something like this and...
Hey, Ben, you're kind of a vegetarian. Are you upset by the meat-eating version of it?
Tremendously. I'm really upset.
So you're sitting there crying in front of your computer?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys covered this last week, but there was a report of this woman who thought her house was on fire.
Yes.
And the firefighters got there, and they turned off the television because her television was, quote-unquote, on fire. She had it tuned to one of those fireplace channels.
It's really
actually. And she actually thought her television was on fire and called 911.
I mean, it was an HD television.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
It's so realistic nowadays.
So you might get really frustrated because you're watching cooking all day.
You get hungry.
And yet you're getting hungry. Doesn't make sense. So a person could starve to death by this. That woman better not switch over to this because she'll starve to death.
Yeah.
That's kind of a jump. A person could starve to death.
I don't know.
That's an HD. All right. Great. So the site again is Air Yakiniku.
Yakiniku. Air Yakiniku.
We'll have it up on the Geekspeak site in 15 minutes after we finish the show.
Yeah. Okay. You know, whatever.
So, so all you podcasters, by the time you hear this, everything's beautiful on the website. Yeah. For radio listeners, wait a little bit, because we're not posting.
But they're where the action is. They're hearing it live.
I know, it's live. And like right now,
like we could mess up.
Right now it's overcast downtown Santa Cruz. It's going to be sunny today.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're cutting edge, guys.
Yep. If you're on 7th Avenue and you honk your horn, we'll hear it. Yep. I mean, it's exciting.
Don't do that, by the way.
Please don't. But I just mentioned podcasts, so let's mention podcasts.
Okay.
Because we were talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Mm-hmm. Ryder, you any podcasts?
Sometimes.
Except for Geek Speak, not so much. Right?
Not so much. I definitely do too.
Do you listen to him, Ben?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I've been listening to podcasts since I was able to hear the spoken word on my Diamond Rio.
You've been in the online radio business for a while, huh?
Well, I've been listening. I mean, I'm a listener. And I think that I was always completely amazed at the fact that you could get, you know, this kind of content, you know, for free. Yeah. I mean, I was just always, and I thought this isn't going to last. They're going to start charging for it. But no, it goes on. I mean, even this is like over 10 years ago. And now the thing that amazes me is how many people don't listen to podcasts or aren't aware of how great they are. There's this great resource. Any kind of subject,
anything
you could.
If you're really into clog shoes, I'm sure there's a podcast about them.
And
how it is. It's pretty great.
I mean, it's just and the other thing is, a lot of these podcasts aren't just, you know, quirky things. They're what they call flash fiction. They're like short stories.
Yeah,
you know, and I've been listening to a lot of these over the years. You know, and the people that are writing a lot of these good stories keep popping up in different podcasts, and I feel like we're still in one of those pioneering zones where you start hearing these people, and these are going to be like the Mark Twains and John Steinbecks, you know. You may not realize it now, but this kind of medium and these kind of stories are really opening up the whole world to just about anybody, because a lot of these podcasts you submit your stories, mm-hmm. and they read them for you, so you don't even need a computer, really. Yeah. So it's never been more accessible to a writer, and there's never been more content for readers like us, and it's amazing out there. There's so many good podcasts.
Right,
and
so
it's
let's
free.
So let's list a couple. We do have a forum on this up on the Geekspeak site. I'll link it to today's show. Basically, different ones that we talk about. We posted this, I think, originally. One of our listeners, RWG a million, talks about podcasts for geeks, and I added my list. So some of the ones that I really like, WNYC's Radio Lab mm-hmm. is an awesome podcast and radio show.
Oh yeah.
But why don't we talk about the fiction versions?
I mean, there's of course Escape Pod, which I know you listen to as well,
I do.
Which is one of the premier. Flash fiction type science fiction podcasts done by Stephen Ely, and hundreds of episodes, and people, you know, send their stories in, he reads them. Sometimes they pay for these. Then, you know, you're not going to make $1 million being a writer doing this, but I mean, you get your stuff out there and people listen to it, and I go on these hikes every morning and I listen to like an hour long podcast, a story of somebody written, you know, it's just like raw creativity right there. And, you know, they filter them.
And the sometimes they're brand new stories. Sometimes they're more classic stories and they're read by someone who can read. I mean, that's an important thing when listening to written word, via audio. And, let's see, they vary in length too. I mean, they're definitely, a lot of them are short, you know, 3 minutes, a minute, something like that. But some of them are, you know, up to half an hour, 40 minutes, mm-hmm. depending on the story. And they're, I mean, science fiction, who doesn't love that?
Our audience kind of does, I think.
And so, and there's Escape Pod. They also have Pseudopod, which is like the horror version of it. Mm-hmm. And these all kind of mix a little mm-hmm. bit. And they also have Podcastle. It's the same group. I think they're making a little bit of money. They take some of the revenue they get from basically donations, and they give it to the authors and sometimes the readers as well. So it definitely supports that
listen to this stuff is free. It's, you know, the Creative Commons license. So, you know, you can share it. You just can't change it or sell it. So you're listening to all these great stuff. I mean, they throw some Asimov in there. You know, you're listening to new stories varying in length from, you know, like... 10 minutes, you know, which you might hear on, for instance, Drabblecast, which is another really good one.
Drabblecast, I don't listen to. I'm going to start listening to that.
Right, that's quirky. Yeah.
Please, you know, if you listen to a podcast you think we'd like, go ahead and participate on our forums. I'll have the link for the forums up on the GeekSpeak show page for today. But please add a way to it, because so the fiction ones we like, Podcastle and this one you just mentioned,
Drabblecast,
which I don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also
Norm
Sherman. There's also a great one. The New Yorker does a great version where they take a writer that's currently writing for the New Yorker, and they go and pick a story they like over the history of the New Yorker, and then they read that and talk about the work between, you know, what they think of that writer. Yeah. So normally it's like someone who's writing currently, and they talk about someone they really respect, kind of a mentor that's written.
That's great, you know,
and it's with the editor of the New Yorker and this author who's then reading. It's just a great way to talk about, you know, if you're interested in
oh yeah.
In writing.
Oh, and there's that GeekSpeak podcast.
I like that one. You know, I don't listen to it as regularly now anymore.
Well, you know, it seems like I've heard it before. I get this deja vu but you know, all you need is like, you know, I listen to it on my iPhone now, but I used to listen to it on my iPod, and you can also get, you know, podcasts are generally MP3 format. You can, I mean, what was the cheapest MP3 player you've seen at Fry's?
Oh, man, I've seen ones for $15.
I know.
$10.
I mean, you can really, in this hours of, you know, you do need to get the MP3 somehow, so you need to have a web browser.
One thing about when you're doing radio, you listen to, and especially this forum where I invite all the geeks on to talk about news stories, I'll listen to, I think Ben and I both listen to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Very regularly, they'll talk about a story, and then later, a couple months later, I'll be like, didn't we cover that on Geek?
Yeah.
And you guys were like, no. I'm like, I must have heard it on a different podcast. That happens all the time. Anyways, well, the list is up on the site, because I think it's just so crazy long that we wouldn't be able to get through
it. And send in your favorites, because, you know, everybody out there, you know, you're our listeners, and we want to, you know.
You turn us on to a new podcast, we'll mention you on air and thank you for it, because it's always a good thing. And also, for all you radio listeners that aren't listening to podcasts, try it out. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great for commutes.
All right, Ben, what's going on in space?
Oh, way, way too much. So I have two news stories that I briefly want to cover. One is just tremendously unfortunate. The International Space Station's main toilet has broken.
Is this the one that was recycling?
And you can't just call the plumber and, you know, have them fix it. And you know what's even worse? Here's what's even worse is that Endeavour, the shuttle Endeavour, is up there to deliver some components for Japan's space lab. And that means that on the International Space Station right now, there are 13 astronauts, which is a record.
Ooh.
And there are two working bathrooms right now. One is a backup bathroom, which, I mean, I'm sure it's not pleasant to use. And then the shuttle actually has a bathroom as well. And so what they've done is the shuttle crew is now confined to the shuttle toilet, and the International Space Station residents are using the backup toilet in the Russian part of the station. But, you know, this could, I mean, it's kind of like losing a backup hard drive. You know, what if your other hard drive goes, then... You know, you're kind of in trouble. You know, so they have urine collection bags that are ready and, you know, whatever. And what's interesting to me is that Brian Smith, who's the flight director, said, quote, "We don't yet know the extent of the problem." But then he added that the toilet troubles were not going to be an issue for now. So I don't know. Like, that's – it's kind of scary. I wouldn't want to be in space and have the toilet fail. So
didn't the original astronauts have to wear diapers or something?
Oh yeah.
Well, during takeoff they do to some degree. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's a weird one.
Okay, so what
for
are they,
good reason?
So what else is going on? Be further from home.
Also, on the 19th of July, an observer, Anthony Wesley, from Australia, observed this crazy dark spot that no one had ever seen before on Jupiter. And he looked back and he had imaged that section of Jupiter a couple days before, and sure enough, the black spot was not there. So it's indicative of either like a localized weather phenomena or an impact. And so they've actually confirmed over the last couple days that it was an impact of some sort, probably a comet or asteroid. And it's actually pretty big. Like, you know, there's this image on the website that's probably 500 pixels by 500 pixels. And the impact is probably, I don't know, 10 by 10 or 15 by 15. It's pretty big on Jupiter. also, they estimated that the impact, they don't know what caused the impact yet, but they're estimating that because of the size of the debris, it was probably a couple hundred meters across. And it also, the force of the explosion was probably also thousands of times more powerful than the Tunguska. I never know how to pronounce that. The Tunguska impact, which was on Earth back in 1908.
Out of curiosity, it's kind of scary to say, oh, we just found out that some large body got hit. Is it so far from us it wasn't like on our radar, if you will? And therefore, maybe, that's why we didn't see it? I mean, would we see a hit like that before we got annihilated?
Yeah, I mean, they're probably probably the reason is because it was far away. Jupiter is pretty far away from us, and so we're probably not tracking as many smaller objects that far out. And then I forgot what the other thing I was going to say was. But in any case, it definitely says something about our ability to detect these objects that could potentially be issues for the Earth.
Jupiter's
massive.
We need
to put more money into that, in my opinion.
I mean, Jupiter is like, whenever you see a picture of Jupiter and they show it next to the scale of the Earth, Earth is like a pinhead,
right?
And then Jupiter is like a giant, you know, basketball
or a beach ball, or
a beach basketball.
It's more
type
colory,
thing.
You know.
Yes,
basketballs are
a lot more colorful than a basketball.
Mm-hmm. Well, one more.
It kind of looks like a gas giant to me.
Thanks. okay, thanks, Ben. We'll get back to you in another space story in just a minute. Ryder, hi.
Hello. Hi.
So you told me something kind of exciting about humans that I didn't know.
Yeah, apparently researchers have discovered, and I think they've actually known for a while, that humans actually emit visible light. So we glow. You just can't see it.
Yeah, so
well, it's not
visible,
about
then. It's about 1,000 times less intense than what the human can visibly detect with their eyes.
Okay, so why are we producing light? And this would mean you have no other light source, human in a box, hopefully with the ability to breathe, and a little bit of light is coming off. Why?
Yes.
Is it the skin? I would assume.
they're trying to figure that out. Basically, all they're saying at this point that I can determine is that it's a biochemical reaction with free radicals.
Okay.
There are theories that it's actually the melanin from the pigment from tanning has some fluorescent compounds that could be contributing to it.
Kind of makes sense. It's very light affecting, so it makes sense that it might.
Yeah. It might be all the Twinkies and Ho-Hos people have been eating recently, that kind of stuff.
Can be it.
But more interesting is that they've determined that there's a circadian rhythm to it. Certain periods of the day that your body emits more light than others.
So we're basically fireflies, is what you're saying?
I don't know. They did some research. They have these highly sensitive visible light cameras that the results, it looks like an infrared camera results, but it's actually registering visible light.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some studies with some individuals, and they recorded 20-minute intervals, I believe, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And 10 a.m. was the lowest light emission, and about 4 p.m. was the peak of the light.
What if you ate a bunch of fireflies? Would you start glowing more?
Probably more in your stomach, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that's like what the aura, when people say, oh, I'm reading your aura, maybe there are people sensitive to seeing that light, you know?
I won't comment on that, but...
no, it's Santa Cruz.
When in high school or so, I went to some lava beds up in Northern California, and there was a great cave that is about a mile down. It takes a while to walk down there. We get down there, and we turned off all the lights and laid down with the earth kind of compressing us, and I remember having this great conversation about how it felt like I could see my hand. So I'd wave my hand in front of my face, and I swear I could see it, like very faintly.
Wow.
And so we talked about that. I was with John Tracy, who's one of the geeks at the time and comes on every once in a while. And we talked about it, and finally we're like, wait a second. I'll wave my hand in front of your face, and you tell me if you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. So my brain was constructing what my hand would look like in front of my face.
Oh, there's a name for that.
I bet there is.
There's a name for when you're moving your body and you're aware of where you are in space. They talk about it with robots a lot.
That's like with phantom limbs. Your arm lobbed off, and
I didn't
you
lob
feel
off
like
my
you
arm.
Still, no, don't lob off your arm. But people who do get their arms lobbed off or amputated, they feel like they have another limb, and they believe that their brains actually react if it's there.
Right. That's the next test for the scientists, is to find out if people with phantom limbs radiate light from that location, and then you've detected the soul. All right.
That's intense.
Very cool story. Thank you. I'm wondering, does that mean that we can have cameras that pick up that light?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, because you always had the infrared version, of course, because we're normally pretty warm.
Yeah, this one just registers normal light photons.
And so you can see it? So you can see a person?
Yeah.
Is it coming from, like, the eyes and stuff, too?
It's mostly radiating around the face, not entirely. It's chest, shoulders, but that's predominantly where it is in the face.
And they're still not sure exactly the chemical
reaction. Well, I think that's, I mean.
That's cool. All right, thanks.
I'm just trying to be digging up someone's face.
That's weird.
Speaking about crazy faces, Al, hi.
Hey.
Oh, not your face. I meant your story next. Oh, on Facebook.
My story. Which one is that?
Oh, I'm sorry. The in-your-face big pixel.
Oh, yeah. This guy, I mean, normally you, when you take pictures, you know, you go out and buy your camera, you want to just get a bigger, more, more megapixels and all this kind of stuff. But there's a website called 640x480.net. And the guy, Michael Daniel, he has a project where he actually created a book called In Your Face. And he uses the worst possible camera he can find.
Okay.
So he takes these really horrible pixelated pictures, in today's standards, of people. Sort of unexpected kind of people shots. He's a good photographer too, because I've looked at a lot of his photos. They're really kind of nice slice of life kind of photos, guys in cowboy hats and people just walking around and just sitting around and waiting and just doing things. You know, nice pictures, but they have this weird quality of this pixelized kind of feeling that actually there's something to it. I would never have guessed this. I actually had a Quick Take camera when they first came out, the Apple Quick Take 640x480, and it was horrible, you know, but, I always just was bummed about it. And you know, I kept getting the best camera I could get every year.
Right.
And here we are,
that pixelization
2009, and I've got, you know, really high megapixel camera and all this kind of stuff. And now somebody's doing something with these, like, really low resolution images. And they're, you know, there's a certain sensitivity to them. And it's reminiscent of that time, you know, the kind of imagery that came out. It's like looking at sepia photos of, you know, like in the 30s or something, or daguerreotypes, you know, and, you know, in the turn of the century. There's a certain quality of the picture that also resonates with the time. And so when you see
I do like these pictures.
Yeah, they're just, you know, you look at me like, yeah, that's a low resolution. I mean, they're not, you know, they're good, you know, well-composed photographer.
This is, the number is 640x480.net.
Right.
640x480.
Oh, yeah, I just said buy, but yeah.
Yeah, and
which is a standard resolution that used to be, I mean, that's like your 4:3 ratio that you see in...
And these pictures are very compelling. I like it.
They're just,
they really are.
Let's just look at these pictures for the rest of the podcast.
It's a great radio experience, let me tell you.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want, is your radio listeners. Right. Already
talk a lot about a lot of visual things.
Right,
what's really interesting to me is, as low as the resolution is, it seems like a stylistic thing that's been done to these as opposed to them being low res. I don't see them as low resolution. I see them as stylized when I look
right.
at them.
That's, I mean, you could probably get a filter for Photoshop that makes your picture low res. Well, you can just drop the resolution in Photoshop and
It's also like the way the camera takes the photo. Something's strange about it. It's like either the way it encodes the compression.
It's like that plastic camera came out. It begins with an M, Morga. There's a style art right now. This is like crummy camera that was made.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And people are like taking pictures with it.
It's so exciting to have lower quality imagery. Yeah. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You know, I read Henry's piece every week for this, and I realize that it sounds so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't describe it. We've had a couple shows about it.
So you know, I just listened to it just now. Yeah. Oddly enough, you said one appointment
crowns
and veneers. And I always heard you say it, and I always thought, I don't really understand what that means. And I just understood it after, like, all these times.
Yeah.
You go in once, and you can get
so while you sit there, he makes a new tooth. It's really cool.
Right, so it's like all done
no
in
temporary
one
thing.
Sitting.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've had a couple shows on him because we found out about him, and he's actually my dentist. Oh. And anyway, this also less radiation thing is also really cool that he uses. But I'm not trying to promote him too much. I'm just saying that we don't talk about the actual tech about it every week.
Uh-huh.
If you want to listen more about that, you can listen to one of our past shows. Maybe we'll have him on again, see what he's doing lately. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Now I feel like we should talk about Santa Cruz Electronics, but we probably shouldn't.
Well, you know.
They're online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Yeah.
There you go. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. Rick Filman is in the other room waiting to take your call. The phone numbers I will give you in a second. You can ask us anything you'd like. You can comment the news stories. You can correct us. You can suggest a podcast that you might like. Heck, you can do whatever you'd like as long as you don't get me in trouble with the FCC. Give us a ring. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Okay, for all you podcast listeners that know how to use your computer for recording and stuff, you can do this. Go ahead and feel free to record a question for us and I will play it on air. So I know that we don't, you're not synced up, you can't call us while we're on air, but you can go ahead and record questions for us and send me the link of the MP3 file or the WAV file, whatever, and we'll play it on air next week and actually answer your question. It'd be kind of fun. All right. So while we wait for calls to pour in, as they will, let's go ahead and go to the next story. And, Ben, it's actually you. What's going on with
space.
The moon? Yeah, well, the moon specifically. This is kind of
the
exciting.
Okay, so
and
NASA's
this has kind of been
lunar...
covering everywhere, but we'll cover it too. What the heck?
Yeah, it's really cool, though. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter has returned its first imagery of the Apollo moon landing sites. So all this time, you know, all the people talking about how it's a hoax, well, you know, we have these NASA's now to prove it, these NASA images now to prove it. Oh, wait, we've had those all along, NASA images. Well, anyway.
So they were able to actually image the locations of the landing.
Yeah, they're like 4 pixels by 4 pixels.
Can almost tell things there, right?
Yeah, it's awesome though. But you can see the shadow, so you can see it's obviously an object on the moon. You can probably calculate the height based on the time that it was taken.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, really cool stuff. They're very, very small images. The LRO is actually going to be going by much closer, and it's going to be able to get higher resolution photos. So those are forthcoming. But it took those photos between July 11th and July 15th, and it got Apollo 11, 15, 17, 16, 14, all five of those. So pretty fantastic.
Why is it we can't just point a telescope at the moon, like a really good telescope, and see it, like from here?
They're really small.
You know, we can't. From what I understand, we can't. But you can shine a laser at the locations because there's actually one of those a mirror, basically. It's a corner, you know, mm-hmm. three mirrors lined up at 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so you hit a laser with that and it will bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I heard that there was a great show on doing that and testing that out. The Mythbusters did it, right?
Oh.
So they wanted to test out whether we were there or not. And you hit a laser and the laser bounces back. And you're like, oh, well, there's a little mirror on the moon.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, you'd think you'd just have a really strong... telescope.
Yeah.
And you could just, I mean, because you see really good pictures on the moon. I mean, we're looking at Saturn and stuff, right?
I wonder if the moon sites are on the non-dark side of the moon, if you will.
Because yeah,
the moon is tidal locked. It's always facing us. I'm assuming that at least one of the landings is on this side of the moon, if you will.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
And then the other thing is Apollo 14, you can see actually more than just the lunar module. You can see the shadow, obviously. You can actually see some very faint tracks, just kind of like lines, where the astronauts were moving back and forth to some scientific instruments, which you can see is a little blip as well, too. So for that picture, the lighting was perfect, and they got that.
Great.
And then lastly, the LRO is there to figure out one of its missions is to figure out potential good landing sites as well for further missions to the moon. So, it's looking in the past and it's looking to the future. It's kind of cool.
It's great. Thank you, Ben.
Certainly.
Ryder, what's going on with iTunes and Palm? I've heard whisperings.
Yeah, well, Palm had a new phone that came out called the Pre, and one of the major features that they were touting was ability to sync with iTunes. So you get all your phone, all the music on your phone from your iTunes, and
and the information, the address information, things of that nature.
Presumably, right. Yeah. Okay. Mostly music.
Music was the issue. Okay.
They did this by emulating itself as an iPod in its firmware. Apple
probably didn't like this. I could understand they wouldn't want people to do that. So they released a new version of iTunes, I think a week ago or a week or two ago, that basically broke this functionality. And how they did this was they restricted what USB vendor codes could be synced to it. So they made it basically iPod only.
Right.
Whatever method they did it before, they kind of enhanced it. So
I think we
Palm just Palm just fixed this like a couple days ago.
Oh, they fixed it again.
Yeah, they fixed it again. And what they're doing is they are now in their vendor code, their USB vendor code, they are saying that they are Apple. They're using the same vendor code. And at the same time, they're also reporting Apple to the USB Foundation, whoever is the, you know, the coordinator of the foundation for USB devices, you know, whatever the standard is, claiming that Apple has violated this by restricting the USB vendor code that they'll allow with their software.
Right,
which is kind of comical because at the same time, they themselves are probably violating the same standard by mimicking another device's and using another company's vendor code.
Sure, sure.
So it's going back and forth.
Well, this is interesting because if Apple claims that this is a security feature, meaning that it's to protect their private information, and it's some kind of encryption or security protection, bypassing that is in conflict of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So there's definitely a concern here from Apple's perspective. I would assume
I haven't heard any references to it being a security violation. I mean, security on iPods and iPhones is kind of a joke anyway. I mean,
it doesn't matter though. I mean, the Copyright Act is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act is a pretty, you know, horrible piece of legislation, and easily you could fall under it by accidentally doing something like this. I mean, by doing something that makes a lot of sense but could theoretically be, you know, looked at as a security breach.
I don't follow how you would say it was a security breach, though.
Well, meaning that if I've set up something to use my software in a certain way and you try to change the way you're going to use it and I've put a restriction in place, which I'm calling security, you breaking that is a violation. So it doesn't have to be anything specific that is encryption or anything of that nature. It just has to be the way I phrase my software definition. They're not necessarily modifying anything about iTunes. That's the difference. So it's possible that that's the way that they're getting around that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that calls into question like any reverse engineering effort at that
point.
That's
basically what the Millennium Copyright Act does. I mean, that's how horrible it is. That's why I was just brought it up as a topic for this. So Pre is fixing, or Palm's fixed that for the Pre now by cheating. Is also saying that, look, you're breaking the USB open communication standard thing. Yeah.
It's a very fuzzy, you know, thing that they're trying to quote, and you know, just the fact that they're at the same time, you know, many people's opinions breaking, you know, falling away from that standard. So
even worse,
It will likely continue. You know, it's unfortunate for pre-users that like this functionality because they're probably gonna find it's gonna be going on and off and on and off frequently and. Who knows, it may eventually go to court.
Right.
So pre-users won't be able to use Apple's iTunes.
Well, they can currently, yes.
Right now they can again.
Yeah.
Last week they couldn't.
But they're going to have to keep upgrading their software or their firmware.
But does stop updating iTunes.
But does Palm have their own iTunes?
It wouldn't matter, I think. I mean, just because everybody uses iTunes. That's the thing, is they're trying to get into that market.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of people saying that they don't like the iPhone. There's a big movement of saying the iPhone's, you know, sucks. I personally have one. I like it a lot, but I can definitely see their perspective on that to some degree. It is a great iPod, music player, though, even if the phone is a little. In any case, let's go on to a call from Santa Cruz. Eileen, welcome to Geek Speak.
Thank you. I had a comment about the body illumination thing that you were talking about earlier, how to see that around a person.
Mm-hmm.
Actually have noticed that. I'm not a person who sees auras, even though I'm from Santa Cruz. But actually, when I was in a group of people, they were talking about it. What I could see is this kind of a luminant edge to people, and it did seem to be better around the head.
Is this why there's light?
Why there's light. You know, I can't tell you why there's light, but I can say it probably has something to do with being alive, because I had a pet rat that lived about 4.5 years, and she, as rats do, and this is a funny sideline to say, is that rats grow tumors really easily. That's why they use them for testing. So do you know that the tumor is grown because you've been shooting it up with a bunch of stuff, or is it just the thing that the rat does?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know what else to say about that.
So your rat had tumors?
So my rat had tumors, okay. And at one point I had to put her down.
Mm-hmm.
And I held her as she, you know, died, basically, you know, mm-hmm. put her to sleep. And what I noticed is when she went limp, the area around her got dull. And I didn't notice it was glowing, but I noticed it go flat. So right as she left her body, it went dull.
So the thing I would question right away is whether that is your brain showing you the world a certain way and your knowledge affecting that.
Well, I wasn't looking for it.
Right, no, of course, but your entire body has an emotional reaction to it, and so of course your experience and even a physical one is going to be a little different when that happens. I tend to flow that way rather than the amount of particles coming off of them.
It's reasonable to assume that when an animal dies or anything dies, there is a change.
Yeah,
something
of course,
is no
it should
longer
be, right?
there.
Yeah.
So the something that it was is gone, and that's what you're perceiving, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Whether it's lighter.
I was definitely attached to her as a friend, but the thing was is I wasn't even thinking, okay, this something groovy is going to happen. I was just, you know, watching her go.
Let's talk about another, no offense, but another dead thing in your life. You've got an old computer?
Yes, speaking of, my Apple PowerBook G3. I've always loved the computer.
Is this a clamshell kind of thing? Looks like a big clamshell, big plastic, like is it rounded corners?
It's rounded. It's black.
Okay.
It's black, yeah.
I know the one you're talking about.
And it didn't have a USB port.
Right.
It has a card.
Right.
USB card. Anyways, I would love to just have a computer to get on the web and, you know, dink around at 3 o'clock in the morning, nothing too serious. But I'd love to use the one that I have. Is there any way to upgrade that so it can cruise the net without crashing? Because that's when the net first came out, it just couldn't handle it.
You could run OS 9 and you could do that stuff. It really has to do with how much your time is worth.
I've known people that put OS 10 on a G3 Pismo PowerBook.
Mm-hmm. You have?
Yes. And
I've seen it too.
Which version? OS 10?
It's OS 10, yeah,
okay.
on a G3 Pismo, which is the G3. It's like a dark-colored PowerBook. It's a little bit rounded, I think, is what she's probably talking about.
Yeah, mine's black.
Yep.
Is there anything we have to do in the computer to handle all that?
You probably want to bump up your RAM as high as you can, because that's going to be a factor. There isn't any reason why a G3 can't run OS 10.
Mm-hmm. You probably need an older version of OS 10.
Might need an older version of OS 10.
You can run Tiger, I believe.
Yeah.
I guess the question I have, Eileen, is whether you want to spend a lot of time trying to make that work.
Well, she's just browsing the web, though.
Yeah.
If you're just looking at web pages...
I'm just looking at web pages, maybe doing a little, you know, checkers with somebody. Would that be a big deal when you start pulling stuff off like that?
No, that'd be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I could see you trying to, I could see you doing it. I wouldn't put a lot of, I wouldn't put a lot of time on it, a lot of energy on it. I mean, I think right off the bat, when you're trying to install OS 10, you've got to get one of the clean installed disks, like not a disk that came with a machine, because those actually kind of do detection of the local hardware that they came with or kind of set up for the machine they came with.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to have to get a disk of OS 10. That you could probably find a Mac user that might have bought one at one point and get that. You're talking basically an upgrade OS disk. Then, even then, when you run it, I thought that OS 10's install kind of looked for USB device. Now, it might be that card works that way, but I think it's more of a hacking it a little bit to make it work. In any case, I'd love to hand you a disk. Unfortunately, I don't have an old OS 10 disk to give you. But if you have someone in your life that can do that, great. I wouldn't go out and buy the operating system because it seems a little risky and probably pricey, and you can't return software.
Right, and I'm trying to save money by not buying a whole new computer.
There's also the cost of upgrading the memory, because I mean that's going to be your biggest crippling point. Is well, two, one, that the CPU is going to support it, and the second, that memory, you'll have enough memory to actually run OS 10
right.
on it.
So you're going to go buy memory.
So you have
sticks.
To go buy memory. It's probably the memory is not in production anymore, so you're going to be paying a premium. Unless you can find somebody that's like selling like a dead laptop and you can just get the memory out of it.
It might be easier for you to find a newer machine through Craigslist for free or through FreeCycle, mm-hmm. Because a lot of people have the same computer you have, and they're not going to use it, right? They're not going to get it working. It's just sitting on the shelf, and you just have to find one of those people. Try FreeCycle. It's a great local – Santa Cruz FreeCycle is a great local resource to ask some, you know, ask the group, does anyone have old RAM like this or an old computer like this, and see if you can get one.
That was a cool laptop, though. It had like a little bit of rubberized surface.
Yeah.
It felt good in your hands when you picked it up. It was a nice industrial design.
Eileen, thank you, and good luck. And if you do get OS X working on it and that functions, let us know. So then next time when someone calls, we can say, yes, this is how to do it, and this is Eileen's email address. And
okay.
Her home address.
We're sorry about your rat.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Bye.
All right, bye.
I think she either had really good eyesight or, to detect light levels that low or, you know, perhaps a little clairvoyant or something.
Well,
I just
look at it from the perspective of, I knew, like in that cave, I knew that I couldn't actually see the hand. I tested it, right? I looked at my friend's hand, couldn't see anything.
Yeah.
My hand, I could see. And I really could, I saw it. And the reason I saw it is my brain is very complex. And it knew that my hand was there, and so it tried to produce an image there. And so I could see it. And I'm not saying that, and that kind of thing where your brain actually overrides what you think is a very common thing. Pareidolia is a great example of that. You see a face when a face doesn't exist because we're trained to see faces so that our parents don't leave us alone. It's a very simple organism thing.
Very powerful thing.
I have a story about a robot rat. I don't know if we want to look like we planned out our show or something.
It sounds pretty planned, doesn't it? Well, that was the first segue I've ever done between two questions of a caller. I felt really proud of that. I felt like I could retire now.
Yeah.
It's been 9 years.
You've done everything.
I've done everything.
You've achieved every goal you've ever had.
I've never asked, what's the rat robot story, Al?
Well, this is from Science Daily.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a team of scientists. They've developed this robot that can seek out and identify objects using its whiskers. It's called the Scratchbot, and
nice.
It's a rat. It's a robot rat. And instead of using visual sensors, which everybody says, oh, we have to make the robot see, they're using whiskers, which are a little more they're more sensitive, but they're really easily replaced, and they're just using that tactile sense of navigating. It was done at the Bristol Robotics Lab in England,
mm-hmm.
Combination of them and the University of Sheffield. And so it instead of using vision to identify objects, it uses touch. And it's if you were somewhere where you couldn't see, So it's just using this idea of the whiskers. I'm not sure if...
in a lot of sense, doing the image processing to figure out where things are mm-hmm. is pretty processor intensive. Cameras are relatively cheap. And then using distance detection devices, normally ultrasonic distance detection devices, are actually pretty expensive per
mm-hmm.
unit. And they're big.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a really small device, nothing can mm-hmm. really beat a little whisker. And you could even put the whisker, you could put a microphone element on the whisker itself.
Yeah.
And as it rubs, it's going to make different sounds. You probably detect texture. It's a pretty cool...
I'm not sure.
It's creepy, of course, because then you've got little rat robots.
I originally thought, do we need more robots? Are there not enough rats in this world that we have to create robot rats? But then I started looking at the story and I thought, well, that's not a bad idea.
Okay, so what about we make robot rats that go and find rats and eat them or something?
And impersonate rats and then infiltrate the organization.
That's right. And then they eat them and they consume them, and that's what powers them. And basically,
that's we're combining all these other stories and making the perfect.
A month ago, Ben listed out all the stuff you've been bringing up with robots. And by the way, if you hear a crazy robot story, let us know.
Yeah.
It's always fun to find them. And it was great to hear the list just run down that we've got telephone climbing, people lifting, insect eating. The list is crazy.
It's amazing.
We really are in the dawn of a new age of the robot.
Yep.
Oh, I'll miss humanity. Let's go ahead and take another call since we can do that.
Do you think there's in the Terminator movies, you have the Skynet and the Teledyne?
Yeah.
Do you think did those exist before the movie, or do they just name themselves after the movie?
They had to name themselves after the movie. Oh, please, yes.
Yeah.
Judith, it's been a while. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
This is Judith from Watsonville.
Yes, and I thought before I talk about my main thing I want to talk about is mm-hmm. I want to mention that TED Talks has a podcast.
That's one of the ones I do too.
Oh, that's
lovely.
And I just want to recommend that they have audio or video, and they're very interesting, very different.
To go to the conference is thousands of dollars, and you got to be an important person.
And you have to be invited.
You got to be some real important person.
Or Ben. Ben went and did the setup one time.
Oh, well, or
yeah.
Ben.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. TED Talks, probably one of the most – if you get depressed and sad about the state of the world, go watch the TED Talk videos.
That's and how much are they?
They're free because
they're
free
to get the podcast.
And you know you can
or you can go. There's an RSS feed. I'm looking. I have the podcast, but I'm not sure I found the link specifically where you can sign up for the podcast. But they have. It's easy to find the RSS.
Yeah,
feed.
Yeah. And you know when you find an RSS feed, if you copy that URL and then you go into iTunes and say subscribe and paste that URL, you actually get it. The other thing you can do is if you're using iTunes, you can just do the search on the podcast area for the ones. Searching TED, for example, on iTunes is going to get you the podcast, both versions probably, because it's such a popular one. Mm-hmm. iTunes is all about popularity, which kind of... Yeah. Here's a little trick you can do. When you go to a friend's house and they're using iTunes and they're not subscribed to GeekSpeak, go ahead and subscribe them, because then we have bigger numbers, and that's always look good. And, of course, then make them listen to the show, because we're awesome. Judith, so why do you call?
Okay, the main reason I called is I have a little, it's a combination FM radio, audio recorder, and MP3 player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been working well until suddenly I get this message. Whenever I start it up, it says, please format on PC.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, it turns itself off.
So when you actually try to turn on it and play it?
Do anything. I can't do anything. I can't do it.
Yeah, so what's happened is the hard drive inside there, which is actually probably a flash drive, has been corrupted.
Uh-huh.
And it requires you to reformat it.
Yeah,
or initialize on a Mac.
You have to do that with your digital camera sometimes.
Yeah.
And,
not a big deal.
And so can I do that on my – I'm trying to do that on my – I have a Mac.
Uh-huh.
And I – You know, somebody said, "Oh, you just
you can
erase it on the using Disk Utility."
Right.
But then I don't see any way to format it.
Go use Disk Utility and say erase, and there's a drop down there of what format you want to do, and go ahead and use.
I don't see anything about format on Disk Utility.
What?
Can you mount the drive on your computer?
What?
When you plug it in your computer on the Mac, you see something?
When I plug it, I'm opening Disk Utility.
Right. You need to actually have your MP3 player attached to your computer.
And I'm attaching the MP3 player to the computer.
Great. And then you should see the icon.
Yeah.
And then there's a little erase tab at the top of the window that when you select it.
Yeah, I erased it. I erased it with just the regular erase. I didn't do any special.
When you go to erase, in the little list of things, what you do is there's a volume format, and you just have to pick the Windows format.
Okay. Yeah, it's
called
MS-DOS file system. So I did that and I erased it.
That's it.
And then it still doesn't work.
That's a problem.
So that's a problem.
Yeah.
What kind of MP3 player is it?
It's a Denpa VT50.
It's got an FM player on it, too, which is really nice.
Well,
I would recommend you getting a new one, except for that one's a really cool one because it has a radio player. And personally, I like radio. So mm-hmm. I like radio.
Yeah,
I think you probably want to go ahead and go to a Windows machine and try it out. The other thing you could do is go to their website and see if they have any utility for this. It's possible that the thing came with a CD, and you actually need to load the software back on or something, and that's what's gotten damaged. That's what I would do.
Okay.
So go to
their
website and try to find
it. The problem with this player, I really love it, and I've been really enjoying it, but when I went to their site, everything's in, Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with...
Yeah.
Well, you got to learn Chinese to...
So take some Chinese courses.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to try and do. I was going to try and go over. I have a friend. I'm going to go over today and try and use this Windows machine.
That might do it.
And
does he speak Chinese?
See if that does it. So when you erase it, it automatically reformats it?
Yes, when you erase it, it formats it. Erasing on a Macintosh is synonymous with formatting.
Okay.
In that window. So thank you so much, Judith, for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck. All right.
Bye.
Ben, I don't know if Judith could hear you. What do you think?
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it seemed like it. I don't know. Anyway, we're not going to find out today, that's for sure.
Maybe she just wasn't paying attention to him.
There's a bad joke in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I won't take it.
Ah, shucks.
Well, let's see. I don't think we're going to be able to take another call. I think we're running out, unfortunately.
I have a super fast news story.
Please do. A CERN update by chance?
Yeah, CERN update. Unfortunately, I wish I could say I have good news. It keeps breaking because it's the biggest thing we humans have ever made. So now we've got some vacuum leaks, which are going to lead to a delay to probably mid-November or after.
Okay.
Because they have to heat up these chambers and vacuum seal these chambers that weren't vacuum sealed correctly or right. that broke or something. So anyway, that's just the quick update.
Okay.
It's kind of sad. You know, I kind of want to see it in action. So the update is it's not going to run through the winter like we thought it would.
But at least it's going to start up during the winter. Possibly.
No, it will not. It will not restart until mid-November or after because of this new development, which is the vacuum leaks.
All right. Well, thanks for that update. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Great Infusions Coffee Beanery and Espresso Machinery Showroom, offering artisan coffees, coffee makers, and specializing home espresso machines, parts, and repairs. Located at 317 Potrero Street on the corner of River Street in Santa Cruz, or online at greatinfusions.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly hour-long radio quiz program. Each week on the radio, you can test your knowledge against some of the best and brightest in the news and entertainment world while figuring out what's real news and what's made up. On the web, you can play along, too. That's Wait, Don't Tell Me, today at noon on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. And, you know, speaking of podcasts, I listen to that as a podcast because I just, for some reason, on Saturday afternoons, I'm not available here at KOSP to listen. In any case, Geek Speak on KOSP is also supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. By the way, the support services mean you can actually bring your computer into them and they'll help you out. Al, crazy USB of the week device.
Well, Lyle, the one today is it's a missile launcher that you plug directly into your it's not a real missile launcher. This is the kind of missile launcher that's actually kind of neat. It's like almost one of the foam missiles.
The toy one, like the Nerf thing.
It's a toy thing. It's like Nerf. It's got three missiles on it, and it's got a little rotatable base that you control through a little piece of software that's on your computer. That's right. Okay. And so say you're in a cubicle environment, you can control
right.
And then once you think you have it right, you can set all the settings and then launch it, and you can hit, the guy like way over in the other side of the room.
Who's talking on the cell phone?
And once you might want to test it a little bit, but you could program in the exact coordinates and then just be able to do it at will and have the thing just boom, shoot off and fly and
that's
land.
Awesome.
And that's the kind of missiles, they're okay.
That's the kind of thing you need to do. You practice on the desk, practice hitting their desk at a certain spot, and then when the coffee cup goes down, see if you can get in the coffee.
Yeah, see if you can get it right in the coffee. Yeah.
Like, is that thing pretty expensive? Like under $100?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
It's got servos and the whole deal.
All these USB devices are.
See, that's one of those things that I'm going to have to get some for work, because getting a USB device that's robotic that you can aim and figure out from the computer, that is a great way to make other projects.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
It's everything is USB. They're just doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Anything you can plug in.
Geek Speak on KOSP is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. By the way, David Lawrence is the puppet master, or was the puppet master, on Heroes. And David keeps on saying she should come on the show, so we'll have to get him on. But anyway, he owns the trademark on Geek Speak, and he lets us use it, which is really nice. The geeks today were Ben, Ryder, and Al. I'm Lyle. Coming up next is the Car Guys, Car Talk. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, on the web at kosp.org. You're welcome to participate on our forums at geekspeak.org. I'll see you online until next week. Thanks for tuning in.